Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, your journey through time, lords, and space, where we take you on a wonderful trip through the land and time and every adventure of Doctor Who. Welcome to the Into the Dalek episode, formerly Season 3, Episode 2, formerly Year 51, Episode 2, formerly Series 8, Episode 2. We'll figure out a name eventually. Until then, just know we're going to be talking about Into the Dalek this week. I'm Dalibor, Dolly. You can call me whatever you want. Joining me, as usual, the wonderful Stephen Strum.
That's me.
The equally wonderful Sean Norton.
I like that.
Purely by accident, I got a Game Center friend request.
So, I'm okay with you doing that every week from now on. Yeah, I was going to say, I like that we change our intro a little bit every week. I don't think you ever say the same thing twice.
Excuse me, because I forget. And returning, the one, the only, Marcus Beard.
Hello. Welcome. Yeah, but is that your Welsh accent? I don't... No, I think somebody was talking Wookiee.
Oh, okay.
That is the Pax Pox going through Sean's...
I was excited to have him back.
Yes. Okay. Great to have you back.
I said, yeah.
It's nice to be back. I did miss you guys last week. The lengths I went to watch this, the first episode in Honduras. Fortunately, BBC...
Cry me a river.
Look, there's a BBC podcast down there.
Yeah.
The BBC has BBC Latino America, and they had Doctor Who Marathon that entire weekend.
Doctor Mysterio.
It was actually on, and it was subtitled... but it was on at like 11 o'clock at night, by which time I'd already watched it through iPlayer.
Nice. So you had caught up, so that's good. And you watched this past episode when you came back, right?
Yeah, I actually came back early. We came back Saturday night, and within 20 minutes of setting the cases down, I was in front of the TV watching Into the Dalek.
Brilliant. Yes, this week's episode.
That was me last night. Oh, was it coming back from PAX? I didn't get a chance to watch it all weekend because I was working till Monday night, and then Tuesday I was out. But I landed last night. I got back unpacked, and me and the lady sat down and watched Who the second we could. So
I too ended up running out of time on Saturday and had to catch it Sunday evening. I think this was the first time that I had missed a Who airing on its day in probably about 2 years.
Yeah, it's definitely first for me too.
Yeah. And then we're not going to ask Steven because he probably watched it live.
No, I actually missed it too on the premiere. I watched it on Amazon because I was out bar hopping with some friends at the time, so I didn't get a chance to see it live.
Wait a minute. You made fun of me because I hadn't watched it yet, and I was about to give you credit because that's one of the few things you actually have.
So am I the only one who watched it all the way through on Saturday night?
Yeah, you might have been.
In Central America, on various planes for like 8 hours, and got my dog and everything, and I still managed to be in front of the TV watching it.
Believe me, it's not necessarily by choice. I mean, correct. I don't know about these guys, but I was shooting spaceships with people, so.
Sure.
Yeah, I was just drinking and eating street hot dogs at 2 in the morning. So,
I too was drinking and eating. So there's some semblance of similarity there. Well, shall we dive right in? Before we do, I just wanted to before we dive into this week's episode, we briefly got a little bit of what Marcus was thinking. Last week, he kind of piped over some of his thoughts through Twitter to me about the premiere. So before we dive into the Dalek, I just want to get a little more besides 140 characters from you, Marcus. Just overall thoughts and impressions of that first episode and of Capaldi.
Okay, well, I still love the opening sequence. I still hate the music. Sounds like amateur hour Reggie Morgan and his Hammond organ, and I don't like it at all. Bring back the older, more orchestral, grander feel. The episode itself was spotty. I think starting off in, a time zone they've visited so many times times before, and was probably not the best of ideas. Capaldi killed it. I mean, he killed it. He, you know, the whole monologue about being Scottish, so he can complain about everything. He was brilliant in that aspect. I thought that Clara, better used than has been in a long time. Again, her, her monologue about, who were the posters on her wall as a child and blah, blah, blah. That was really cool. I thought Vastra, Strax, and Jenny, you could have taken them or left them. I mean, they were so good in the Christmas episode a couple of years ago and have been so good in various other ones like the Crimson Horror, that this time they just felt, you could have just insert any other character here. I thought it was certainly not the best season opener, but still, the two main characters, the ones we will see week in and out, were the ones who were the strongest, which I suppose is a good thing.
Great. So just overall thoughts of the debut of Capaldi by himself.
Oh, he's the doctor that we thought that we all hoped he was going to be. And I mean, this is reinforced, and we'll talk about this about in to the Dalek, because, he, as tradition, you don't see too much of the doctor in the first regeneration, post regeneration episode. I mean, they're normally comatose or whatever. But yeah, I thought he's got, that little bit of manic, madness about him. He's got that sense of humor. It looks like he's a bluntly honest doctor. I mean, this doesn't seem to have any care or concerns about hurting people's feelings, which is a big change up over the last two. And again, I think, we should probably revisit that question at the end of this, at the end of the Alec episode, because there's things that, having just rewatched the episode again today, there's things that are in my mind, quotes that he threw out that are just brilliant and just sum him up as the doctor, I'm hoping he's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, then let's dive right in. Let's dive right into the Dalek, as we say.
Into the Dalek.
What a segue. What a segue. So this episode again, second episode of Series 8. Just a quick plot breakdown. The Doctor rescues Journey Blue, who's a rebel fighter, from her space shuttle, which is being attacked by Daleks. Goes back in time, grabs Clara with them. They come back to this kind of future planet, this future situation, and come to find that they have to go inside the one captured Dalek that they have, the good Dalek, after a kind of rescuing Journey. And they go inside this Dalek to try to find out, how they could stop the Daleks in kind of layman's terms. And then it has a radiation leak, had radiation poisoning, which is what's causing the Dalek to not be an evil Dalek. It's a good Dalek. And by the end of the episode, they come to find out that not all Daleks are, or he's not really a good Dalek. He's just kind of a malfunctioned Dalek. But that doesn't quite mean that he's a bad Dalek. They kind of save the rebel fighters. So, in a nutshell, that was the episode. They were shrunk down, injected into the eye plunger of the Dalek and made their way in. Initial thoughts.
Can we just start off with, that pre-credit sequence of the Doctor rescues Blue, lands, and they pass the nano, whatchamacallit.
Uh-huh.
And so you can shrink somebody down. He said, fantastic premise for a movie. Not so much
fantastic. Fantastic.
Uh-huh. A fantastic premise for a movie, but that the next line, not so much for a proctologist.
Yeah.
I had a mouthful of soda. I spat it out. That was just the line that said, that reinforced, I like this doctor.
There were great lines throughout the episode. Sean mentioned one as well on Twitter earlier.
Oh yeah, there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, a little later when he gets Clara, and he takes her back to the, you know, he, you know, when first of all we see his bluntness, he gets her back on the TARDIS, like, you know, well, you're not a young woman anymore. Yes, I am. Oh well, that's the idea. Keep your spirits up. Yeah. And, you know, it's just
the whole caretaker thing with Clara.
Yeah, I'm not his companion. I'm his caretaker, and the response is yes, that's right. She cares, so I don't have to.
So I don't have to. Yeah. I mean, and then later on, it was like, oh, he was just all like, he ripped her so much. It was fantastic. Like, it was just so, like, it was genuinely funny. Like, she's like, there better not be a comment about my hips in this hallway or whatever. And he's like, oh, definitely, you're fine. You look like a man or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh.
Yeah, comments about my hips will not be appreciated. And it's like, ah, oh, it's fine. You're built like a man.
Yep.
It's brilliant. It's almost as if Moffat is going out of his way, and this is a positive, to get away from the Dreamboat Doctors of the past, mm-hmm. who would never say that, the last two Doctors. David Tennant, as much as we love him, Matt Smith, as much as we love him, wouldn't turn around to Clara and say, you know, oh, you're looking old.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's just, you know, it's these little lines that are giving me serious hope for this season.
You know, I wonder how much of that is Moffat and the writers, and how much is actually Capaldi throwing in his own personal kind of touch on things.
Regardless of whether or not he's coming up with the lines, it's his delivery that's really selling them.
Exactly. 100%. Totally agree with that. It's his delivery, and he just owns those lines. I mean, if it carries on at this pace, you're going to have to go and buy another quote book of Doctor Who just this season, because there's going to be so many awesome things.
I was going to say, just before we move on from this, it reminds me a lot of, like, especially Tom Baker era. I think I've mentioned this specific line on this show before, but those kinds of lines, the, like, you're built like a man sort of thing, it just reminds me of this one line that Tom Baker gave to some, like, evil queen or Egyptian queen or something that he was talking to, and he says you're a very attractive woman probably, and it just really reminds me of that, like, same kind of snappy kind of thing that feels like, yeah, like you said, Dally, like it feels like it comes from that actor and not mm-hmm. necessarily from a, you know, a script room.
Most definitely, and his delivery, I mean, these first two episodes is what's really drawing me into Capaldi. And And we mentioned it last year when we found out that Matt Smith was going to be leaving. I think Marcus, you and I both wanted somebody who had a little bit more edge to him. Maybe not, you know, evil, but he continually asks, is he a good doctor? Is he a good man? And that question hasn't quite been answered yet. And Clara doesn't even know how to answer that question, right? She's still fighting with her best friend losing her, you know, her best friend losing their face, changing their face. So there's a lot of, naivety, I guess, a little bit, that she doesn't want to realize. She doesn't want to come to the notion that this is it's a different person. It's the same. So I do think that all of that mixed in can only be delivered by Capaldi this way. I mean, I think that he's nailing it out of the park, but, kind of back to the overall episode, what I found really kind of interesting was there's kind of this three-part structure, and I think this may be something that we see throughout this season, especially in that there's present day, which is Clara and Danny Pink. We get to meet Danny Pink for the first time, who has his own kind of individual backstory, and we'll get to that in a second. Then we have the time-traveling aspect, where in this case was the far future with the Dalek invasion, or we think it's the far future. And then we also have the whole kind of side thing of heaven with this mysterious, this mysterious woman who seems to be rescuing people milliseconds before they die around the doctor and bringing them to this place known as heaven. So
it doesn't even seem like before they die, because I mean, if you remember, what the
at their, it's really at their death,
yeah,
right?
It's definitely not before,
the white light.
That robot was impaled in the last episode.
That's true.
I think they're dead, and you know, they're being moved somewhere. But yeah, I do agree. I like this new structure, mm-hmm. especially when you've got the doctor off somewhere else and you've got this real world sort of like going on. But it's not the kitchen sink real world that Russell T. Davis,
right.
know, overdid to a certain degree. I mean, I've been going back and watching a lot of old school Who's over the summer, you know, while I was laid up. And the Russell T. Davis stuff, a lot of it doesn't hold up as well as it did the first time around. I mean, Tennant's performances were great, but a lot of the drama stuff just feels cheesy. I think so far, I mean, you know, this, you know, I will put my hands up and I will say the introduction of Danny Pink did not suck.
Right, right.
I agree.
I had visions of him being this Rory 2.0. And no, I mean, you know, he also had his comedy moments where, you know, and again, this was jumping back and forth within the time, you know, the time frame of the Earth section where, you know, he was saying, you know, he was saying what he should have said. And then we cut back to what he did say, and then cut back to him again. And he was banging his head on the thing. And you see a spark between him and Clara that is now so different to the spark between her and the Doctor that actually proving to be an interesting dynamic there. And a soldier, and, you know, there is a tortured past. We all know that's coming. Is, you know, I mean, I'm actually looking forward to learning more about him as opposed to, hi, I'm Rory. I love everything, and she loves the Doctor, or she loves me, or what. And yeah, I think this is going to be, this is all coalescing two episodes in. Give me hope.
There's, you know, there, Stephen and I were kind of discussing this a little bit on Twitter earlier about how, there's this kind of interesting there's several interesting theories about Danny, right? So I think some of the major theories right now, and I think Stephen, you and I are in kind of thinking the same thing, is that Danny is maybe either not of this world or he has ties to otherworldly moments, because his mystery is that looks like he's killed someone, or it sounds like he has killed someone, or someone has died at his hands, which I wonder if that will loop back into the whole heaven thing again later on.
So specifically what I was telling to Dali, if you don't mind me giving my
information. Yeah.
The way I was kind of looking at it is you look at Danny, and what we get is a bunch of characters talking to him and saying, like, oh, you were a soldier, you fought people, you killed people, but at no point does anybody ever use any specific language. They don't talk about who he fought for or where he fought at, or, you know, what he did in the army. They just talk about it in these super vague terms, and even he doesn't mention it beyond just, like, I was a soldier. And on top of that, it's kind of a two-pronged thing. On top of that, we have these constant reminders that he's such a ladies' man, and he's such a, you know, I know your type, and everybody's constantly trying to tell him that. And yet he is, like, kind of baffled by that, and then we see him, quote-unquote, in action, and he kind of sucks at it. Like, he's a total goofball. And when it actually comes to talking to Clara, but then everybody still seems to have these feelings. So I thought maybe that he's sort of, like, unwittingly being influenced, or people around him are being influenced by something unwittingly, like a chameleon circuit or something, and that we're eventually going to find out something along those lines. And that, you know, we see that he's a soldier or whatever. Well, maybe he's a soldier in the Time War, you know, and killed people in the Time War. But, you know, that's just one theory, just because it seems, especially the thing where everybody's constantly saying how, you know, what a ladies man he is, that just seems like such a, like, bad wolf type thing to me, like this sort of constant thing that's always never really brought to the forefront of the conversation, but is always just kind of hanging out there until the last episode, and then bam, here you go.
Yeah, see? I mean, I was thinking more along the lines of he might have been ex-unit. And perhaps there is something, you know, in there where he's been involved in, you know, some of the stuff that we've seen with you, the not too distant past. But yeah, I'm intrigued. I hope they don't convolute it too much. I mean, I'd actually be perfectly happy if Danny Pink was a regular soldier who, you know, left the army or left whatever because a civilian died. Oh, friendly fire, or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, that's literally his backstory. And, you know, he's become a teacher, and he's trying, you know, he is socially inept. I mean, especially with the, you know, with the girls, he is about as smooth as sandpaper. But he's interesting. And to have, and, you know, this is my usual Moffat fear. We've got three characters now. I mean, we've got the Doctor, but we've got the other two who are getting interesting. And I'm just, I mean, maybe it's Moffat doesn't have to, you know, he was so busy with, you know, perhaps Sherlock last year and, you know, everything else with regards to the 50th anniversary that perhaps that he's had some free and clear time to work with other writers. And this time around, we will actually get some premium Moffat characters, because when he does create the good ones, he created, you know, River Song, and before she became overused, she was deadly. Mm-hmm. Brilliant character before she became this caricature of herself. Hello, sweetie, no spoilers. So, you know, if he can do that and maintain it and drip and drab the info out, we might be onto a good season.
There were yep. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Marcus just said the same thing I was going to say, that I kind of hope that there's not a big convoluted sci-fi twist involved this time. I want him to be somebody who chose that path and either something went wrong or he screwed up or made a mistake or something. And he, you know, he regrets it and it haunts him or whatever. And then when him and the Doctor meet, they have these two sort of clashing outlooks or ideologies or whatever. And it brings their relationship to kind of a weird, unique level, as opposed to just the normal, like, well, he's the companion's companion and he's the new Rory or Mickey or whatever. Like, somebody like the Doctor would actively dislike because he's a soldier or an ex-soldier. I mean, I feel like they kind of dropped a little bit of hintage on that this week with his whole, you know, his reaction to all the soldiers on the ship and then not letting, what was her name, Blue, come with him at the end, you know, because of that. Like, even though it was clear she had changed and, you know, she was probably a good person and everything, he wouldn't let her travel in the TARDIS, right? He's just like, I just wish you hadn't been a soldier.
Right.
So I'm personally hoping that he doesn't wind up being the master or Dalek clone or somebody, but instead he's just a dude who, you know, wanted to, you know, do right in his perspective or whatever, and him and the Doctor are just going to clash. And then who knows, maybe in the end, maybe Clara has to make a choice, you know, maybe she falls in love and the Doctor's only around a certain amount of time, and then, you know, he kind of is like, okay, well, can't have the soldier around, so what's it going to be? I don't know. I think there's some really interesting possibilities there to kind of do a dynamic that hasn't been really done before, as opposed to, like, we were worried when we first found out that this guy was going to be part of the main cast, that it was going to be the lovey-dovey stuff and take stuff away from, you know, the perspective on the Doctor and the focus and everything. But I honestly think that if written right and handled right and not Moffitted up, it could do – or it could add some really cool layers to the season.
My only issue with that is if – like, I feel like if we're ever going to have, like, Danny Pink turning out to just be a normal soldier – at some one point or another, we're going to have like flashbacks to him being a soldier. And there's just always been something about both Doctor Who and Torchwood where the soldiers in those shows, and it actually, you see it kind of towards the end of this episode, they always just look so like they're just running around with toys. Like, I don't know what it is about, like, the way that the it's just a directorial thing. It's not necessarily anything to do with the actors or anything. It's just the way that they move their guns and they hold their weapons and fire them, and then like have the exaggerated kickback. It just looks, for some reason, it always just saps the drama right out of the situation for me, and all the tension is kind of gone in that instant.
I think we're finding so far with this new Doctor that a lot of the surrounding act kind of whatever, but Capaldi really elevates everything he's involved with. So now. And this literally just came to me while Stephen was talking. Imagine we get a scenario where this darker Doctor really wants to prove his point and doesn't care how he does it. So imagine he takes the three of them to the moment when Pink or whatever screws up or something really bad happens. Imagine he makes him relive it. Like, and he's like, look, Clara, this is what you're dating. Like, I think that kind of stuff could be fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, especially with Capaldi in the mix and thinking he's right and proving his point and everything. I don't know. It's just the thought. But I – if done right, I think this could be stellar, stellar stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm already intrigued, and it's again, like Marcus was saying, I think it's better than we feared it was going to be already. I mean, granted, it could still fizzle out and be a big disappointment, but for now, I'm on board.
Yeah, so. I totally agree, and I think this dynamic. Obviously, we know that this is the school that Danny and Claire are teaching at is a school from, you know, the very beginnings of Doctor Who, is just a fantastic nod back to all of that. But I'm, you know, we're starting to see Clara move into this. I don't want to say Donna Noble don't need the Doctor territory, but there are some snippets, some little fibers you see in there of, of Clara saying, you know, of her kind of becoming her own person away from the doctor, right? She's got a career. She's really focusing on her career. And she does tend to bring that into her adventures with the doctor. Obviously, last week with Deep Breath, they had the whole, you know, the classroom flashback and how to, you know, teaching the kids and stuff. But I think that there's a little bit more of her, you know, her focus kind of in that angle.
I think even it's closer in comparison to what was starting to go on with Amy and Roy near the end.
Maybe.
Where she was becoming, you know, she was doing her modeling career and they had that whole life on the side, right? Where they were together, then they were getting divorced and they got back together. And the doctor just was dropping in less frequently, right? And granted, there was a whole fear of like, if you travel with me too long, you're going to die. But yeah, I think we could see that too. And I think it ties back to what kind of way back in like Tooth and Claw, was Tooth and Claw? No, School Reunion,
yeah.
Where Sarah Jane was like, you know, you touch lives here and no one's ever the same when you leave, right? Like, mm-hmm. like what do you think happens to us when you just decide to drop us off and move on? So that'll be interesting with Clara too, because even if with this kind of independence, there's still nothing like running with the doctor, right? And
right.
seeing universe born and die and alien civilizations, all this other stuff. So that's another cool thing they could do too, depending on if the rumors are true, if this is her last season and if, you know, she's heading out, it'd be very curious to see how Moffat handles that.
You know,
Lord knows he botched the pond something fierce. So
he, and the pond was what, 2.5 years, 2.5 seasons with the doctor. And this would be Clara's second season. Rose was 2 seasons plus, I guess, right? You know, appearances here.
Is it a season and a half, technically, for Clara? Because she came in the second half of 7.
Yeah.
So really, it would be a season and a half.
A season and a half.
But yeah, they average about 2.
The interesting thing that you brought up was that, you know, Amy and Rory were kind of – they were living their lives, right? They had the ponds, right? The kind of mini series, the web series that showcased aspects of their lives and where they were separate from the doctor. And the doctor started just kind of dropping in and making house calls, so to speak. And the same thing's happening with Clara here the whole time. He comes to her home or her office, picks her up, they go on an adventure, and then they come back and he drops her off and that's her day, right? Where in the past, you know, Donna and Martha and Rose and whoever else would hop into the TARDIS, especially Rose, hop into the TARDIS and be gone for months, weeks, you know, years potentially on end without ever going back home. And so I'm seeing this definite difference in the way Capaldi and Jenna, you know, Jenna Coleman's interaction has been definitely different from the past. So, yeah, astute point there. So let's kind of dive into the main essence, which was the shrinking into this Dalek and the whole good bad Dalek thing. So there was one of the comics, one of the graphic novels, Doctor Who. We were just kind of speaking about Doctor Who comic books and graphic novels before the show started, was called The Only Good Dalek, and it kind of dealt with a similar-ish plot about a single Dalek that was a good Dalek on the space station. And the doctor had found some way to, in the comic, and found some way to, you know, use the Dalek for good purposes until the end of the Dalek kind of turns evil. And it's a similar plot here. So the very first question I want to ask is, can a Dalek be good? And I want to ask that to you guys because we find out that, you know, radiation may have tweaked this Dalek's mind, but, you know, radiation tweaks every mind, and that's how we evolve and develop. Can a Dalek be good?
Well, I mean, before getting into, like, the deeper physical, philosophical part of that, like, I just thought it was maybe worth pointing out that the reasoning for the Dalek turning quote-unquote good I thought was kind of interesting just because, like, we know, if you're up on your Doctor Who lore, the original Daleks were, like, mutants living in a radiated wasteland, like because the radiation was what turned the Daleks into Daleks in the first place, and now it was radiation turning this Dalek back into something closer to a benign being. Mm-hmm. Beyond that,
look, I think this is something that they've explored this before. I mean, they explored this way back in 2005 with Christopher Eccleston in the episode where Rose first meets a Dalek, and they find a Dalek in Utah. It's been tortured, and it kills at first, but then it commits suicide. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it says, you know, more about, you know, the Doctor would make a great Dalek. I think it's something that they're, you know, they're keen to touch on, and they do touch on that again. I mean, you know, there's a section where the Doctor, you know, mind melds, if you will, with the Dalek, and then all of a sudden the Dalek senses all the hatred, and you know, there's that morality play that they have going. Yes, you can have a good Dalek. I mean, at the end of the day, they are genetically engineered creatures that were born out of fear, but now they're talking about these inhibitors that are inside them that keep the, you know, the nastiness bubbling, mm-hmm. and let them enjoy anything beautiful. So, you know, why not? You know, why can't there be, you know, good Daleks out there? I mean, we've seen it in the past. Was it the in Daleks Take Daleks in Manhattan, when you had the human Dalek hybrid, and then that led on to a Dalek who was supposed to be crazy when he walked into the time vortex, and then became, I think it was Dalek Thay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, he was, you know, he'd gone in the time vortex and he could see everything, and he basically betrayed the Daleks because, you know, what happened was the Doctor clone destroyed all the Daleks.
Again, yeah, I mean, that you mentioning all that stuff kind of brings up kind of one of my problems with the episode. And actually, I know we're only two episodes in, but kind of this season in general is that, like, Doctor Who is going back to the well pretty hard. Like, we have the idea of the, you know, the Doctor in the first episode of this season. We have the Doctor in, you know, old-timey London, 1800s London. We've got the clockwork robots who are building people out of a machine out of skin and people, organs and stuff again. Then we've got this one where the Doctor is dealing with yet another Dalek who is mutating into some kind of not bad Dalek. And yet we've seen that 5 times, and it always kind of ends in the same exact way. This time it does end a little bit differently with, obviously the Dalek doesn't just flat out die. Now we have at least some kind of change has happened, but, you know, it's more or less the same there. And the line that you guys mentioned earlier on, you know, off of the podcast of like, you know, I'm not a good Dalek, you are. It's just like that. They said almost that exact same line during the Matt Smith era, mm-hmm. with a, you would make a good Dalek kind of thing. It's on the plushies. The Dalek plushies say that when you squeeze them. It's just, I don't know if it's intentional on Moffat's part, but it's getting kind of a little bit frustrating right now that every Doctor Who story that we've seen so far is basically just an older Doctor Who story that we've seen so far.
See, I disagree.
I think this is a major bugbear from last season. I think, you know, perhaps we're suffering from Moffat fatigue.
Maybe.
And Moffat is suffering from Doctor Who fatigue. I mean, you know, when he's very, very, when he's good, he's very, very good. But when he's bad, God help us. And, you know, we're not the first ones to say this. We're not the only ones to say this, that maybe it's time, you know, and he'll have a year with Peter Capaldi, and then we can say, you know, not even a year, we'll get to the Christmas special, and then it'll be a case of, you know, bye-bye, which, you know, it'll be so long and thanks for all the fish. He's done some good stuff. Time to move on.
It's interesting because I disagree, and believe me, I'm no Moffat defender, but I didn't think this was a retread so much as it was inspired by, you know, the 2005 Eccleston episode. But it added enough new stuff and enough to the legend of the Daleks that I thought that it was very good on its own. Going inside them had never been done. The antibodies, the processing a little bit of the proteins of their victims, you know, like all these nods to the kind of lore and actually how they work, and then the neural inhibitors and all that cool stuff. But what I thought was different this time was that, at least the way I interpreted it at the end, is, you know, he opened up his mind, but he still was going to be this thing that he's going to go kill a lot of creatures, Daleks or otherwise. So he hasn't really changed. He's just kind of changed the perspective a little bit, which I guess is still a huge leap for a Dalek. But more to the point, in the difference between Capaldi and Smith is that Smith had all these like hints that like simmering under his goofy young face was like this crazy darkness that if you made him mad, he was becoming the oncoming storm, right? But we have Capaldi, who's still like, I guess in the continuity of the show, is 3 weeks into his regeneration. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know if he's good or bad. And, like, the darkness is right up there. And he wants so badly at the end to rehab this Dalek, the Dalek, to rehabilitate this Dalek, is what I'm trying to say. And he fails because
Dalek.
He's the hatred in his soul.
his 2,000-year-old soul. And that crushes him. Like, and again, this is a testament to the amazing performance Capaldi has, but like it breaks him. Like, he wants, of all the things, he wants to be validated by this, right? Like, he wants to be validated by his worst enemy and be brought and proven that there's good in him. Because it all ties together, right? The whole episode ties together with the "Am I a good man" shtick and all that. And then for the dialect to be like, "Nope," like, "Thank you for teaching me how to hate the right things to hate." And he's like, "Oh god," like, he's so crestfallen, right? And I just thought it was such a great moment, and his whole, like, all the emotion on his face and in his eyes, and you know, yes, there's divinity in there, yes, nobility, yes, this beautiful universe, but at the same time, there's still that hatred in the soul, and it's creating such a conflict inside him as he tries to figure out who he's going to be with this new set of regenerations and this new everything he has. So I thought that it borrowed enough from the earlier Dalek episodes that, or was inspired by, but did enough of its own that I didn't, of all the things, I didn't find it an indictment of Moffat on this one. Plus, I think I read somewhere that the guy who wrote The Waters of Mars came back and wrote this one.
Yeah. Yep.
So, which I thought it was good. Like, overall, obviously it had some weak parts, but especially for an episode with Daleks, which have been so worn down and just become this tired trope, I thought it was good, especially when they went nuts. Like, when they started going on their rampage and they were unstoppable. Yeah. Like, that's what they need to be doing again.
Are we within the same are we still in the continuity where the Daleks don't remember the Doctor, don't know who he is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Which I found –
Kara wiped the memories at the end of the season.
A fantastic kind of – I don't want to say dichotomy, but – the Daleks don't know who the Doctor is, and the Doctor doesn't know who he is, but he knows who the Daleks are. And so it's almost like he's – to your point, Sean, it's almost like he's taking some of his aggression out on not knowing anything and not knowing him on them. So when it does kind of backfire on him that he could potentially – you know, and he does try to at the end to reprogram everything – When things start to fail on him, he really gets upset with himself because this is his one chance to maybe fix a lot of the stuff that happened with the Daleks that was at his hands were, you know, at fault. But I found it to be really interesting, that kind of whole idea of the Daleks still don't know who this guy is, yet he's slowly pushing himself into their existence. And he's shaping them. He's shaping them again.
That I think we could see again, Rusty.
Sure, yeah. Rusty, what a great name. Handles, Rusty, the name.
And I was thinking that it would be interesting to see him in like a future season or whatever, but have somehow converted more Daleks towards him. And then we get a new imagining and a current who of like Dalek factions, right?
Yes.
Like a Dalek Civil War and stuff like that.
Well, we know those exist because there's the crazy Daleks. And when the episode first begins, you know, you see everybody shrunk down inside and entering inside the Dalek. And I kept thinking back to the first time we saw Clara last year, maybe 2 years ago now, where she is inside a Dalek. And the whole time I'm thinking, is this how a lot of this stuff starts to take place? Does this somehow tie back in, at least thematically tie back into some of that? Because now we have them inside a Dalek yet again. This is the second time in two seasons we've been inside a Dalek, so to speak.
Let me throw out another couple of things there. I mean, yeah, second time inside a Dalek, second time in, or third time now inside a machine. Mm-hmm. If you go back to Let's Kill Hitler.
Oh, yeah. And, yep.
Mm-hmm. Antibodies inside the big ship.
Mm-hmm. That was actually another thing I was going to mention on my retread ground thing.
Yeah, they are retreading a lot of ground. I mean, it might be interesting, you know, and going back to the Tom Baker, probably one of the best Tom Baker episodes, arcs, which was Genesis of the Daleks. Mm-hmm. You know, he has the opportunity to wipe out the entire Dalek race before they start, and he says, "Do I have the right?" Blah blah blah. But that all comes from the Khaleds. Mm-hmm. And the Thals fighting each other, and the Khaleds come on, you know, turn out, you know, evolve to be the Daleks. So that might be some interesting, you know, if they're going to retcon, because let's face it, they're taking so many liberties. Both Russell T. Davis and Moffat have taken lots of liberties with the history. Davis more than Moffat, it has to be said, but, you know, the cult of Skaro that Davis introduced, which sounds like a really bad reggae band in my but I mean, you know, they called the Scaro and various other aspects. I mean, does Scaro come back? Scaro was destroyed. Yeah. Scaro's been destroyed several times, apparently, by different producers and writers. you know, are we setting up to go back there? I mean, this one Dalek now has been turned out into the wild, like you said. And what's he going to do? Is he going to end up in Dalek heaven? Is he going to be, you know, like a virus that infects the others? That could be cool. But I'm hoping that we're not going to have too many things in the next couple of episodes that all start pointing to a big payoff, because we know that Moffat couldn't deliver a payoff, you know, if his life depended on it. He always relies on a thingamajig or a, you know, a Ujima flip or some sneaky little bit of...
Ujima flips are my favorite.
There are some rumblings that next week from some of the media that have seen it already. They've done some spoiler-free recaps, and there are some rumblings that it's really standalone. Mm-hmm. So my hope is the same as yours, that that's true, and we just get even more time to really see Capaldi in his element. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a little bit last week, Marcus. Like, we're so afraid of being excited because it's like they have us and we know they have us, but we're so afraid that like this initial excitement is just gonna like they're just not gonna deliver. It's
been
at the
burned
end.
So many fucking times.
And the payoff just isn't gonna be there. But
ironically, next week the next episode is the one I'm most scared of.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Robin Hood.
Oh. It could go terribly wrong, especially with that makeup and that costume. It's such a classical look at Robin Hood.
Isn't it
the Gatiss episode?
I don't think.
Oh, is it? I don't know.
I mean, I'm hoping that it's some futuristic theme park or a holodeck.
Oh yeah, it's Westworld.
It is Gatiss wrote the episode. Yep.
Yul Brynner shows up at one point and just straight up kills Capaldi and Clara, and that's the end of the season.
Yeah, I can see why you're nervous about it.
It harkens back to BBC 1970s Robin Hood.
And that's exactly. Yeah.
A good thing. Trust me.
My immediate thought was it looked like the Robin Hood from that episode of Star Trek The Next Generation with Worf as, "Sir, I protest. I am not a merry man."
Well, it sounds like it'll be an interesting dynamic because the trailers all paint. I don't know if you guys watch them, but I guess the spoilers if you don't. But the next one, basically, it paints a picture where Capaldi is going to be, like he's saying, this doesn't exist.
Please, no recaps outside of the trailers. Blah blah blah. I'm avoiding.
No, it's a trailer. It's the coming next week trailer.
Yeah, that's the only one I've seen. I don't want to see.
That's the only one I've seen. The next
I know what you're talking about, Sean. Like, yeah,
Capaldi does the voiceover. He says there's no such thing, and then all of a sudden it looks like hijinks are going to ensue. So,
yeah, I mean,
I don't read spoilers outside of that. So,
yeah, I mean, I actually stayed away from all the set photographs, everything. Yep. I mean, I saw the Clara rumor that she's leaving, and that comes to Daily Mirror, which is. You know, it's about as trustworthy as the National Enquirer.
So one thing I did want to say, too, before we moved on too far, you guys had mentioned that, like, the whole, I hope we don't just sit here watching all this, like, hey, dead person, you're not dead anymore, you're in heaven forever.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like if you're, you know, just storytelling 101, if you're that brazen about showing that stuff that this early on, I've got a feeling that we're not going to wait till the, it's not going to be like a Bad Wolf situation where it's going to be like, correct. here's a hint, end of season, here you go. I think it's going to be, I think episode 5 or 6 or whatever, we're going to see the first confrontation between them, and then we'll have the second half of the season leading up into the final confrontation between them. I think we will definitely generate a dynamic before we get to those last two episodes.
Mm-hmm. We saw that in season 6 too, where they had the mid-season, you know, cliffhanger.
Yeah, the demons run. That's exactly what I think.
Really well. But I don't know. This is a nonstop arc, right? Like, this is 12 episodes in a row, so they don't have to do that. Like, they don't have to write it and give us that hint of a payoff halfway through. So
maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe they don't have to, but I think that it works from just a storytelling perspective. I think it's mechanically, like, you have a two-arc season, you know? You have the rising action and the falling action, and then you have the climax.
Maybe it's definitely possible, but then, you know, that does fly in the face of Moffat saying, you know, they weren't going to be doing that this year. But of course, he lies. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. I mean, the very fact that we've got two episodes of seeing this Missy character is kind of like just that's the opposite of what you said was going to happen, Moffat.
Yeah, I'm. I mean, look, I passed this on to Dali last week that Missy is already pissing me off after one episode, and then I saw her second episode churn up again. You know, and it becomes, you know, did you say, oh, my boyfriend?
Yeah.
She mentioned. Yeah.
If that's all she does for 10 episodes, I'm fine with it. If they want to build her up in the background and literally has no interaction with Cabaldi and doesn't screw up any of his stuff, fine
with me. She's kind of, what is she doing? Is she building up kind of a super team of people that he's killed or have died because of his hands?
The doctor's cast offs.
The doctor's cast offs. Is she going to turn them into one giant beast, like Franken-beast of dead people?
And she's an Absorbaloff. That's what this is
exactly
all about.
I mean, this is the thing. If they do that for 10 straight friggin' episodes, we'll be collecting the wall. And then all of a sudden, one...
Well, I'm not saying that's all they do, but if they just...
...an episode to try and figure out, you know, that they're going to try and cram all this in. And, you know, Moffat just doesn't have the skill set to do it unless it's Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, three feature-length episodes of Sherlock every year or every two, 3 years are outstanding because it's Moffat and Gatiss at their peak, focused on one, on these stories. And, you know, I was so chuffed that Sherlock did so well at the Emmys last week. I mean, it was really, really good. But, I mean, when you spread him out over a season, and he tries to execute this grand plan in something that is 12 episodes long, or 13 if you include Christmas, he fucks it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, he does. And he's done it every sodding season. We've had one good season. If you take the best episodes out of everything he's written, we have had one good season out of Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, I mean, on the last episode that you missed, actually, we got to talking about Missy, and, like, everybody kind of was on the show kind of jumping on saying, like, yeah, we got to talking about her because of you, specifically about what you brought up in your stuff that you sent to Dali. And everybody was saying, like, yeah, I really don't like her. I really don't like her. And I'm like, why? And then these two here, like, made a really good point. It's like, it's not necessarily her that's the problem. It's the problem that she represents the idea that Moffat is trying to build to something big again.
Exactly.
And every time he does that, he just falls flat on his face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe, you know, maybe after we, you know, we get through Robin Hood and his merry Cyberman or whatever it turns out to be.
Oh, boy.
Look, I wouldn't put it past him. Come on. maybe it becomes, a case of we do get, you know, we know there's a couple of double episode arcs. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you slam this Missy thing into it, move on. And there is something else then for the end of the season, which would be great. I mean, the one thing I actually didn't comment about last week's show that I did want to say, I do love the fact that last week's episode was an hour and 15.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It was a longer episode. And I mean, I think that should be it every week, but I understand the budgetary constraints of the BBC. But I think, season finales in particular should be, or, you know, 2 hour, you know, in 90 minutes to give us a good story to wrap everything up. And that satiates us to a certain degree then, so we can move on and wait for another 6 to 8 months. I mean, because there's so much epic storytelling involved, I'm just terrified that, you know, even if Missy turns out to be the Weeping Angel worthy, she won't be the original Weeping Angels. She'll be the Renter Weeping Angels that turn up at the opening of a fucking envelope any time that there's a statue anywhere within 6,000 square miles of the doctor.
Yeah.
I agree with the feature length thing, especially the beginning and the end. I just worry that he doesn't have the content. Maybe it's better at the end, but I don't know. You go back and you watch last week, and you could totally find – I've watched it a bunch now. There are definitely some filler elements in there. So if it focuses more on the doctor and the overarching stuff, then it's fine. But the longer length, which is something I've championed for a long time, actually worries me under Moffat because it's just he tends to fill it with stuff that doesn't necessarily need to be there.
It happened last week. There seemed to be some filler
in the newspaper and all this other stuff.
I agree with you totally about last week, and sorry to cut you off. You're right. Last week felt like filler, but we know Moffat has it in him, and I will throw down the 50th anniversary episode as the best episode of Doctor Who that we've had in such a long time. Out of, you know, classic anime who, one of the best ones ever. And that was pure, Moffat on top of his game. And perhaps he had 10 months to plan it out. Maybe he had it written so far in advance. Everything came together. All the nods to the fans were there. The story was actually cohesive and kind of worked. And there was lots of really good stuff. And then he went and bolstered it up with the Matt Smith leaving episode, the very next one. But he has it in him. So, you know, maybe he needs to do the step away, like you said, to just write 3 episodes a season and let somebody else be a showrunner. And it's like, I'll come in and I will do boom, boom, and 1 feature-length episode, because he can nail it. And again, I throw the Sherlock thing out there. He has the capability to write
feature-length
episodes that are of shows that are just fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at when we loved Moffat, when we were, like, stoked that Moffat was taking over for Doctor Who. Remember that? Remember those golden days? And it's just like, back then, it was Silence in the Library, and it was Blink, and it was just like, Blink itself was a shorter episode, Girl in the Fireplace was a shorter episode, but then the Gas Mask Children and the Silence in the Library stuff, like, he did the long two-parters, and he just, he told the story that he wanted to tell in both instances, whether it was a two-parter or a one-parter, told the story he wanted to tell with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and he, you know, in all those instances, he brought in some kind of element that, and you look back, and now that I'm actually thinking about it, he always constantly brought in elements that, like, would, at least in the two-parters, would eventually come to mean greater stuff for Doctor Who beyond that. He brought in, with the Gas Mask Children, he brought in Jack. With Silence in the Library, he brought in River Song. They had overarching things, but the thing about Moffat coming in and saying, like, here's this new giant thing that's going to be a part of Doctor Who from now on, is that he didn't have to be the guy who came in and said, like, well, here's how that character ends. This is how their arc ends. And it turns out that was a good thing for us, because it meant that we didn't have to worry about his crappy endings to these kinds of things. Like, if Moffat had written out Jack from the TV series, you know, from Doctor Who, it would have been a disaster, you know? It just, ugh.
Ironically, he did write River Song out.
Yeah,
correct.
3 episodes after he introduced her.
Yeah, okay, that is true.
Something else from there on in just gradually declined. So he can, again, write a great exit for somebody, but they're only allowed to be in 2 episodes.
as long as they're there and gone, then he's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the same with Sally Sparrow. Like, you see Sally Sparrow, it's like, we've never seen Sally Sparrow again. She's such an awesome character. But, like, if Moffat was like, okay, now she's the new companion, and also she's a robot, and she's from space, and she's also, she invented the silence, and, you know, now she's wearing a gas mask, I don't know. Like, it would have just gotten awful. But, like, she's there, then she's gone, and then we're happy with Moffat. You know, that's what we need from Moffat.
Yeah, I think I'm really glad that the actress who played Sally Sparrow went on to so many bigger and better things and priced herself out of the BBC's range.
good.
I think we're all in agreement on that. I think it just comes down to wanting it, knowing Moffat can do it, and then just, no, like, there's this fear now for so many seasons that it's just going to burn us again. So, but you know what?
I'm sorry, I instigated this. We do this every week where we have our annual Moffat bash. And
no, but it's fine, because it's getting worse now, because we're excited, right? Capaldi's doing a great job. Like, we're happy, and we want more. Mm-hmm. So I think this is gonna. I honestly think this is gonna come up every week.
So I just to kind of finish up with the discussion today, the overall episode impressions, and I'm just going to lead off real quick with more of love for Capaldi, and I'm glad this wasn't a lot of in your face, quotes. Yeah, I mean, I think his first episode, it was every line was quotable, everything was a great line, and I'm glad it was toned down just a little bit, just enough for this episode, so that you could start to see some more of the interaction and him doing his kind of character soul searching. So I 2 episodes in, I think Capaldi is developing rather well as a doctor, and I'm excited to see where he goes. And I'm glad that this episode supported it. I do think these first couple were built around it was a two-parter, even though it wasn't technically a two-parter. But they were built around the 12th Doctor and really getting him to a point where we're comfortable with who he is, and you know, the episode, the rest of the episode was more support for his development. So I'm looking forward to next week because I really think next week is the first, and we saw it in the trailer where it's someplace Clara's always wanted to go to meet Robin Hood, and I'm interested to see that it shifts away from being a Capaldi introduction like it was these first two episodes to let's find out what else is going on in the world right now, in the universe, outside of the Doctor himself. So successful episode, I think, from that standpoint. I'm still interested to see what happens with the Heaven stuff. In fact, I've kind of flipped the script a little bit. I hate using that terminology. I promise I'll never say it again. I'm now intrigued by Missy, and I just wish that they don't overuse her. I don't want to see her every episode. I want to see her, you know, every few episodes, or at least a situation, I should say, every few episodes, and to start to figure out, hopefully they drop hints as to what she's there for. So, and then Danny Pink, I think overall the episode was a good episode, lots of fun. The whole idea of shrinking into a Dalek was it's been done before, but I like it. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I was seeing people really lambasting this episode on Twitter. I think John Walker of Rock Paper Shotgun specifically made it was actually a pretty funny joke, but he was talking about how he didn't like it. And I think overall I like the episode. I do think it just went back to the well one too many times. I know you guys made some pretty convincing arguments against that, but I still just think that it's pulling from its own stuff. It's even pulling from other stuff. Like it's pulling from the Fantastic Voyage. You know, it's like Doctor Who is always about, to me, such like an imaginative, crazy place. And those are the best episodes where they're just like, you're using a universe where you can invent things like the Weeping Angels and like the Silence, how they're handled later on, notwithstanding, like the basic premise of them is so super interesting. And it's so unlike anything I usually see. And then here's an episode that is the like insert sci-fi serialized TV show here, and here's the episode about somebody shrinking down to go inside of somebody or something. It's Deep Space Nine, it's the Star Trek The Next Generation, it's Star Wars, if there was a Star Wars TV series, I don't know. You know, it's whatever serialized sci-fi thing you want to talk about. And like Doctor Who doing that, it's just like, I think you guys are better than this, basically, is what I'm getting at. But I still think the performances and the actual moment-to-moment dialogue was super, super fun. I think the space battles looked good. I thought Capaldi was great. I thought Clara definitely had more to do. Danny Pink seems like a super interesting character that might turn out to be one thing or another. But regardless, I think the actor is really good. So I just enjoy having him around, period. And yeah, just like that's kind of where I fall down on the show. Like plot, whatever, but performances and just moment to moment dialogue. Like, yeah, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, overall impressions, Sean?
No, I mean, like, it's. I think I liked it a little more than Steven and maybe Marcus, but I think in general we're all in agreement on the strong points, right? You know, the Capaldi stuff, the intrigue around Clara and Pink, and they're so far they're doing more right than wrong.
Right.
And I think that's good. I think there are still weak points, but, you know, with the supporting stuff on the outside, right, and some of the soldier stuff, or you know, the girl who sacrificed herself at the end. I don't know if I heard her say two words before that big speech, right? Mm-hmm. And just stuff like that.
Gretchen.
Little that things. I didn't,
totally Dr.
I didn't. Right. But the fact that she showed up again was, I wish it had been somebody who we had spent a little more time with throughout the episode. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't have a problem with the concept. I thought it was fun that the Doctor himself poked fun at it and also was really excited about it. He's like, are you going to put me inside? Oh, man, that's so I thought that was pretty neat. And yeah, overall, I liked it. I remain excited, and I remain absolutely enthralled by Capaldi. I mean, his disdain at the beginning when he's like, you're probably feeling a little sick. Please don't be sick. Like, don't throw up in my TARDIS for this world, you know. And she's like, I just lost my brother. And he's like, yeah, but his sister lives.
Save your sister.
You for that. And just like, he's just
– he's on it.
It's – it is so far everything I wanted it to be. It is vastly different from everybody before him, but at the same time, there are hints of those that came before him. It is darker with hints that like the good is still in there because he still obviously wants to do good. And it's just fantastic. And it is the breath of fresh air I think we really needed. I think the show really needed. And I think so far overall they're two for two. They're not perfect, but they're vastly better than some of the stuff we've been getting, and it's really good. And then as for the Missy stuff, you know, it, cautious optimism there too, with a high fear of disappointment. but here's a question for you there, Marcus. What if she turns out to be the Ronnie?
He's categorically said that Ronnie was not coming back, and you know, he said bring the master back.
He lies.
He admits it. If he has recast the Ronnie and called her Missy, I'm getting on a plane and going to Cardiff with a crowbar.
I wanted to say something on this topic actually. Missy, mistress, master.
Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah, actually, I think it would be absolutely fascinating if he recasts. All right, I lost audio for a second. Yep. There, sorry.
Oh, okay, all
that
right.
Was that was the Ronnie cutting you out.
Yeah. No, but like, so all these people that have been saying for a long time the role should be recast, there should be a woman, blah blah blah. Like, I think it would be stellar, potentially stellar, if one of his greatest villains had regenerated into a woman.
Sure.
Like, and then the Doctor and her either this season or next season kind of battling wits and stuff like that. I think that would be awesome. And I would be fine seeing that. I don't know if Marcus will agree, but. I think that has the potential to be fantastic.
Well, I think if the master's regenerated into the mistress, or maybe it's the master's sister. You never know.
Yeah,
I'm put forward an equally bizarre theory. Danny, Ronnie. Yeah.
Oh yeah, man. Maybe. Oh, what if it's the master has regenerated into a woman and the Ronnie has regenerated into a man?
And been abandoned on Earth.
And Ben Abandoned on Earth. Yep. All right, we got it. Adventure Time, Yoda and Cake.
We got you, Steven. We called you.
Yep.
Got it. Mr. Moffat.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking to me for a second. No. I'm like, yeah, you got me, Dally. What?
Marcus, your overall thoughts of this episode?
Hand on heart, best episode of the season.
There you go.
Well, you know, that's contentious, but I think I'm going to have to agree with you.
Yeah.
No, I think, and I know we talked about the, you know, the cannibalization that Moffat's going through with, you know, in the first, you know, in general, he is reusing stuff. Last week it was a bit too much. This week is a little much. But again, Capaldi, outstanding. The way that you've got, you know, we talked about the three different sections. Mm-hmm. They seem to be working really quite well. Clara is coming into her own. Danny Pink is intriguing. He is way less annoying than Martha or Mickey the Idiot or Bruce Tyler. So far, he's way less annoying than all those guys. So we're going to get a backstory. The difference between last week and this week, I love the fact that it was I felt like a more intimate episode. Because most of the stuff that was being done was inside the Dalek, only a couple of people at a time.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you had the scenes with the Dalek and the Doctor, but it was way, you know, there wasn't anything overcrowded. We had a couple of scenes where, you know, introduced to the uncle and, you know, everybody's getting ready to get in the nanotube. But apart from that, there wasn't a cast of thousands and it didn't need the cast of thousands. I think last week felt cluttered. The season premiere felt cluttered with this grand scope. And when you look at, again, some of the best Doctor Who episodes, and, you know, again, let's look at, you know, the Silence in the Library. Half a dozen characters. Mm-hmm. This nebulous, you know, enemy, but it's half a dozen characters, and it's a character drama, and that's where Doctor Who and Moffat comes into his own. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, yes, this week's episode was... Despite the reuse, the recycling, there was so much good stuff in it that, again, it does give me hope. But I do have beaten puppy syndrome.
Well, let's hope that next week's episode, Robot of Sherwood, you know, capitalizes on some of the positive energy that we're getting a little bit of positive energy with Doctor Who. We're much more optimistic now than I think we were at this point last season.
That's good. Good vibe so far. What do you guys rate it out of 5 micro doctors?
Ooh, out of 5 micro doctors. I'm going to give it a 3. 3 out of 5 micro doctors. Again, the same thing I said last week. I'm going to say it this week. It's Capaldi elevates the episode. But I think now the whole, again, the whole idea of these first two episodes are built around getting this doctor out in front of us rather than everything else happening in the episode. I can deal with that. So I'm going to give it a 3.
I will give it 3 micro doctors, 1 micro Clara, and 1 microsonic screwdriver that pushes it up to about a 3.9. <All right>. Because again, it's not a 4, but I mean, it's certainly better than, in my opinion, than a 3. The last week's was a 2.5, I think, in my book. So yeah, I mean, Capaldi continues to kill it. I mean, he's relishing this. I mean, he's not chewing up the scenery. He's not
right.
Overboard, and he is, I mean, you can tell it's a 50 plus year old actor mm-hmm. with so much experience that he knows how to deliver a line. And that's, like I said, nothing against Tennant or Matt Smith or, you know, the other guy, the ungrateful bastard. But Capaldi is a much better actor. I mean, there is so much going on with this character. Just those eyebrows alone could get their own show.
Attack eyebrows.
And I'm glad that his kind of he's very caricature friendly.
Oh yeah, the eyebrows are just making that way. Yeah, the long face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he takes the piss out of himself, but he doesn't chew up the. He doesn't go into total ham mode.
Correct.
I mean, the temptation to deliver some of those lines, you know, just like I said, that first line about that line about the proctologist thing. I mean, that's all that, you know, in the hands of a lesser actor, that would have been delivered with a nudge, nudge, wink, wink, mm-hmm. say no more, mm-hmm. governor. And it wasn't. It was almost, you know, he was talking to himself. And this doctor talks to himself and everybody else just happens to be around. If they listen, they hear. Well, so good for them. 99% of the conversations he's having are with himself. And I like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely. Sean?
Steven? Oh, me? Okay. I'm going to go 4. I'm going to call it a solid 4. I liked it a lot more than I didn't like it, and I think I mentioned why already, so I won't take too much more of our time, but it was good, I remain hopeful for the rest of the season. So,
This is out of 5 or out of 4?
Out of 5.
In that case, 3. I'm going to give it 3.5 Dennis Quaids out of 5.
How many Meg Ryans?
How many what?
Meg Ryans.
I'm not up on my Meg Ryan to Dennis Quaid conversion ratio, so I'd have to take
a look. Wasn't it 10 Meg Ryans make 1 Quaid? Is that make what it
one,
is?
Maybe, Quaid? Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
you're thinking metric, though.
The exchange rate is...
The exchange rate, yeah.
Then 35 Meg Ryans out of 50. You know, I mean, I've basically said all I think there is to say about the episode, really. You guys said much better than I said the same things much better than I did. I agree with Marcus. I don't think it's a 4. I think it's probably better than the last episode, just because I think the overarching, like the Daleks are just more interesting than the clockwork Frankenstein who doesn't have a real motivation, real motive throughout the entire episode. Like mm-hmm. even Daleks at their worst are usually pretty interesting, and this is definitely not Daleks at their worst. So there you go.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you guys for a fantastic episode. We're Doctor Who, we're in the thick of it. We have the whole gang back together. This is great. I'm in a good mood. I'm excited.
I can't wait for the 50th anniversary where, I'm going to be dead, but when you guys are meeting together again and
for the 100th anniversary of Doctor Who?
For the 100th anniversary of Doctor Who, yep.
I could be 93 then.
So we'll still be alive.
You could be alive. I'll probably be watching from my head inside a glass.
You'll have regenerated by then, Marcus. You'll have regenerated.
We'll rename him Handles.
Handles, yeah.
Handles Marcus.
Handles Beer.
Handles Marcus Handles Beer. I knew him well.
He handles it well. You make sure you follow us on the old Twitter, @LonelyTardis. We'll go through our names here, our individual names here in a second. Rate and review us on iTunes. Again, it really does help if you rate and review us and spread the word. Tell your friends to rate and review us. Make sure they listen to the podcast as well. And visit our brand spanking new website, which we're slowly, tweaking and getting it up to snuff, but at lonelytardis.com. Just go to lonelytardis.com. You'll find us. We'll have every episode up there. We're going to do some giveaways starting this week. I have a giveaway.
Yay.
So, yeah, please go to our website. Check it out. Spread the word. It really does help. We're going to continue making great content and cool things. And we all have – we've talked in the past. We have a lot of great ideas of things to do with the podcast and the website in general. And it just – the whole ambience of Lonely TARDIS will inject itself into your Dalek.
Eventually. I never signed up for great content.
You just signed up for gray content.
You're not injecting anything into my Dalek.
Oh boy.
Where can we find everybody individually? How about you, Marcus? Where can we find you?
You can find me on the Twitter at Annoyed Gamer.
At Annoyed Gamer. Sean?
My name at Sean Norton. SHAUNNORTON.
Steven?
I am Steven Stroma on Twitter, StevenStrom.
And you can find me at Dolly Dimovsky. And I'll have all those links set up as usual in the post. But yeah, now find us, LonelyTARDIS.com, and we are out.
Except that's not how it sounds anymore. So like,
nailed it, dude. Nailed it.